This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be completely alone for an extended period of time? Would you get to know yourself better? And would you like what you found? At the age of 75, writer Doris Grumbach decided to try it. In the winter of 93, while her companion Sybil was out of town on business, Grumbach stayed alone at their home in Maine. For 50 days, Grumbach saw no friends, stayed away from the telephone, and virtually retreated from the world. Her new memoir is called 50 Days of Solitude. Grumbach is the author of two other memoirs and eight novels. You may also remember her book reviews on NPR's Morning Edition. She told me she'd spent very little time alone in her life.
I was alone once when my husband was drafted, and I was alone again when we separated. But my life, all 76 years of it, was filled with people. When I was in a family of people, when I went to college, when I worked in New York at various jobs, when I married and had quite a lot of children, it was always populated with people. So this was really the first extended time that I had to seek out what it was I wanted to find.
Did you set certain rules for yourself during your time alone?
Well, I made a schedule. I decided I would get up very early and work until I got tired, and then I wouldn't allow big blocks of doing nothing to happen. In a recent review of this book in the New York Times by a very perspicacious reviewer, she says that the reading that I did was cheating. And I thought about that after I read the review, and I decided that it wasn't. What the reading was, and that was how I spent the time almost every afternoon reading a book, what the reading was listening to other voices, filling the silence with the voice on the page.
You write that at first it was very exhilarating to not hear any other voices because there was no one else around, so you were compelled to listen more intently to your own inner voice. What was that experience like?
Well, you do listen. It's a curious kind of thing. You're not conscious of your inner self surrounded by people. You're not conscious of it if the radio is playing all the time or the television is on, or even, I think, if music is on all the time, much as I would like that to be so. What you are conscious of is this self, this inner core of being, and you listen to that, and it's sometimes frightening. Sometimes there's nothing there, and you think, there is nothing there. I'm the missing person. But other times, you hear things which you might not have heard in this isolation and this solitude.
Now, you write in your book about your 50 Days of Solitude that you found yourself thinking a lot about getting older, thinking a lot about death. Did you think about it more than usual?
Yes, that was something I noticed, that the silence is almost a precursor, I think, to the ultimate silence, and you do think more about the long loneliness, as Dorothy Day calls it, the long loneliness of the final silence. When you're alone, there's no distraction from those thoughts, and so you tend to dwell on them, to wonder whether it will be like this, except without consciousness. I think it's true that as you get older, you tend to speak less, you tend to listen more, you tend to think about the end more constantly.
What's healthy and what's unhealthy about the amount of time that you spent thinking of death?
I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about death. I spent a lot of time thinking about what makes a person. Who was I? Was I a well-supplied, well-stocked mind that could sustain me until the end of my life? Or was I just a layer upon layer of being that had been provided to me by my parents and my friends and my critics and the people around me? My thoughts on myself became very intense and probably not terribly healthy, because there's more of you there alone than there would be if you had some other outlets.
You know, I think often when people grow older, one of the things they want to do is make every moment count as much as they can. And did you ever feel that, well, by sentencing yourself to 50 days of solitude, you were both gaining something, but you were losing something too. You were losing 50 days of contact with other people, 50 days of contact with your partner, for instance. But you would have spoken on the phone more, right, if you hadn't kind of set these guidelines for yourself, right?
Did I lose anything? I don't think so. In living as long as I have stocked up on so much to think about, so much to remember, so many people I've known, so many books I've read, so much music I've heard, that if I heard nothing more and saw no one else, I would still feel that I was occupied. But I gained a lot. And what I gained was a very good approach to the novel I was writing. I discovered that the characters in this book sat at my breakfast table, that they were in the house with me, that their situation seemed realer to me, closer to the core of the matter than they did when I thought about them at odd moments when there were other people around. So the big gain was creative. And I have come to believe that the more you can depart from the world, the better, perhaps, is the fiction that you contemplate.
My guest is Doris Grumbach. Her new memoir is called 50 Days of Solitude. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Doris Grumbach, and we're talking about the winter of 93, when she spent 50 days alone in her house in Maine. Do you know the feeling of both wanting time to pass slowly and pass quickly? Let me explain what I mean. I go through my typical week and I go, as so many of us do, boy, thank God it's nearly Friday and then I'll have a weekend. Then I say to myself, what the heck am I doing? Why, when I want life to go slowly in a way so I could live a long time and feel that life is long and spacious, why do I have this temptation to rush through every week just so I could get to the weekend? It makes you feel like you're doing the opposite of what you want to be doing. You're rushing your life instead of appreciating it moment by moment. So when you were alone, did you feel like, well, that day went quickly, that's good? Or did you feel, well, the day went slowly, that's nice, I have more time?
Well, Terry, I think it has a lot to do with the difference in our ages. Mm-hmm. You're relatively young, and there is that double action working in younger lives. You want to enjoy every moment that you can, so things go slowly, and on the other hand, you want it to happen fast. When you get older, or at least, let me say, when I got older, I tended to not want things to go quickly. So that fit very well with these days of solitude. The longer the day stretched out, the more I got to think about, the more I looked at, the more I listened to and read, the better it seemed. And at the end of this time, when I went back to Washington and then to the South for a vacation, I thought that things were moving far too fast.
Was there ever a time during your period of solitude when you said, oh, God, I have 3 more weeks left. I don't want to wait that long.
No. In fact, as I got close to the end, I wanted it to go on. And I realized how seductive this can be, that the benefits of it far outweigh the difficulties, and that for the rest of my life, whatever there is left of it, I will probably want it more and more.
Now, does that make you feel very secure? One of the things a lot of people fear is being alone, especially being alone when they get older. People who have spouses or companions, you know, worry terribly about losing them for a lot of reasons. One is because of how much they love them, but also there's this just fear of being on your own. Is that a fear you don't have now?
I don't have it. I would hate to lose my companion, but I know now that I can sustain myself. I want to add just two small things which make the condition of this experiment different from most people's time alone. One is that I saw the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have great, great pity for people who must face the rest of their lives alone. That was not my situation. And the second thing was that I live in a place of extraordinary beauty. From every window in my house, I see the sea. And that winter was an exceptionally beautiful time when the snow covered everything across the reach and over to Deer Isle, and I had this one enormous lawn stretching miles of white. I don't think if you lived in solitary confinement and looked at a brick wall for the rest of your life, or lived in jail, or lived in a very unpleasant place that you were forced to live in, that it would be the same. I was sustained in this by the beauty of the place that God granted me to have.
Do you think that you would have enjoyed this experiment when you were a lot younger?
I've wondered about that. I think when you're young, there are so many things working against it. You're so ambitious. You want to succeed. You want people to love you. You want the world to accept you. You work all the time at a kind of acceptance. When you get older, those things don't matter that much anymore. You know that you're not going to be loved by many people, and you will be loved by a few. You know that your career, as far as the active world is concerned, is over, and you're not going to be anything much more than you are right now. So solitude then becomes a kind of companion and not a violation of your ambitions as it was when you were young and people didn't call you or people didn't hire you or people didn't love you.
A couple of the questions you wanted to answer with your experience of solitude was, could you increase your creativity by cutting yourself off from the rest of the world for a while? And could you sustain yourself by yourself? And I guess the answer to both questions was, yeah, you could.
Yes, I think so. Of course, the book that came out of that is yet to be published. So
the novel?
It would be for the novel, but it would be for other people to say, you know, that it did help my fiction. It's very hard for me to say that, but that it did help me, and that there was enough there to keep me alive and happy, or as happy as I tend to be, which some people claim is not very happy. But for me, there was enough, yes.
For your 50 days, did you not talk on the phone with your companion?
We talked on rare occasions. Mostly we wrote letters, and I found that a fine thing, too. I think that when you write to someone rather than talk to them on the telephone, you tend to think more clearly of what you're saying, of what you choose to say and what you leave out, but at least you formulate it in the best prose you can, and that's very good practice for what you do as a writer.
But you're not having a conversation with somebody who you care about a lot. Didn't you miss that?
No. No, I don't. I know this sounds terrible, but I never miss the telephone. I have no interest in the telephone at all. I love getting letters from people. I like writing back to them. but the sound of their voices in my ear is not something I relish.
Doris Grumbach, her new memoir is called 50 Days of Solitude. Our thanks to WNYC in New York. This is Fresh Air.